welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel
to my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life, how to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey, TSL fam, producer Jeff here, and I want to start by saying thank you so much for your remarkable patience as we've been on our summer hiatus and airing some banked episodes of the show. I know we've been off for 2 weeks, so we're throwing this in your feed now, so excited to drop it. It is a huge, all-encompassing catch-up based on the 6 weeks that we've been off. I hadn't seen Meg and Lauren in that long. They hadn't seen me. They hadn't seen each other or our interns. So it was really fun to catch up. And as always, Meg and Lauren just provide so much deep, fulfilling, and enlightening insight on the experience of writing, as they always do, using the experience of their own lives. So the good news is this is dropping into your feed as almost a bonus episode of sorts. And we do have another episode dropping this Thursday. The much-anticipated Lava episode is finally dropping in your feed this Thursday, so we're super excited about that. And from there on out, we should be back on a normal schedule. So we're back with TSL. We're so excited to have you all on the journey with us, and let's get into it.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to The Screenwriting Life. It's been a while, so today we wanted to just do a check-in.
This episode will be sort of an extended Adventures in Screenwriting because we've been gone for a while and there's a lot going on. So Meg.
Oh, I was going to have you go first.
No. I'm throwing it over to you.
Oh, you want me to go first this time?
Yeah. Let's shake it up.
Let's shake it up.
Change is good. Yeah.
Well, I've been on vacation, which is part of the reason we haven't had a show in so long. I did take a very long vacation. It's kind of the last vacation before my son goes off to college in a couple of weeks. So we started in Vienna, where we picked up my son who had COVID from his class trip. And my husband had flown in early to get him. And then we took a train through the Alps, went to the Alps in Innsbruck, went to Italy, went to the Palio horse race in Siena, where we met a bunch of friends who we used to travel with when we were in our early 30s and had no children, were free and easy. But it was fun because we met up with all of them and all of their teenagers came. And so it was super fun. And then we all went to a house in Umbria where our French friends came in with their teenager, one of their teenagers, and Fabian, who listens to the show in France. So hi, Fabian. He's a screenwriter. He's a French screenwriter. And then we went to Rome on our own and then we came home. And so what was interesting about that in any relationship to artistry or writing is that with it, like after a week, my son looked at me and goes, "You look totally different." And I was like, "What?" He's like, "Your face looks totally different." And so I just the other day was putting some photographs in a shared folder with all the people we were with. And I was like, "Oh my God, I look totally different. My face changes under the stress of work." And my shoulders usually are up around my ears. And I've got this giant crevice between my eyebrows because I'm, you know, concentrating so hard to make it work. And just overwhelm and all, but on vacation, especially when you go on a longer vacation, because, you know, if you go on a short vacation, it can take 4 days just to relax. But on such a long vacation, I really could let it go. And so I looked different and I didn't have all that stress. So just how much the stress can really affect your body. And, you know, I didn't have any thoughts about work or writing. I mean, I really just tried to be present, which teenagers in Europe help you do, because you have to be present with teenagers in Europe. And, you know, about 2 weeks in, I got to the point that I wasn't thinking about writing so much that I was like, maybe I'm not a writer because I really don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about it for a minute. I brought a research book for my passion project and I did not touch it. And I didn't want to touch it, almost like it was like a hot coal, because I think my body and brain just had been going on so hard and so, let's call it passionately, writing that and work and stress that my body was almost repelled by it. So, so I got a little nervous, honestly, that, oh, well, maybe I actually don't want to do this anymore because I'm so happily not thinking about it. But then about 2 weeks in at the house, which had a pool, I was in this pool just bobbing around. And all of a sudden, ideas started bubbling in. Just randomly on their own. I was not thinking about it. And all of a sudden, like the ways to approach my passion project kind of bubbled in. And, you know, I had to work at that point to keep it fun and not start making, you know, all of the professionalism of it to come in. Like, well, that won't work. And the studio would want that and blah, blah, blah. I just let it be fun. There's a great TED Talk by the artist who did the book about the horse, the mole, and the kid. I think I can't remember what it's called, but I'll link it up on the Facebook page. Actually, I think somebody on the Facebook page posted it. I wish I knew who, because I could give them credit right now. And it's really good. It's all about being messy and how the brain needs to have fun in order to get to the deeper, more authentic self. And that fun and not worrying is such an important part of it. And I found that the vacation allowed that a little bit back in. Like he was like, draw, like you used to draw when you were six and you just didn't care. So resting helps, you know, really helped me do that. And which led me kind of to, okay, well, what do I want? It was funny because first it was repulsion. Then it was little ideas bubbling up and having fun, which led to a deeper question of, you know, what do I want to do next? Because so much of my wants in my life have been about helping others. So let's call it in service of, be that, you know, when I worked as a producer, that's a big servicing job. It's a wonderful job, but it's also you're helping other people. Or am I doing things for acknowledgement, recognition, confirmation, witnessing? There's a lot, and all of those things are beautiful reasons to take on a project. But I don't know that they're wants. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's like that core joy want. And it's a little tricky because like this passion project, I really do want to do it, but it's also overwhelmingly intimidating because it's historical and would mean a tremendous amount of research and work with a very low percentage chance of actually getting it sold and made, or forget about made, sold, bought as a pitch. Like literally, I think the percentage chance is like 10%. But I don't know. I think you got to follow your want because, and so my brain is always like, well, the plan B would be that you take all that pitch and you write a book, you know, like nothing can go to waste, all that hours of work. So I was doing that. And the other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of catch up is, you know, lava doesn't leave you on vacation. Sometimes that's also why we don't rest, because if you rest, the lava can come up because you're all that overwhelm and keeping busy has been actually keeping it away and keeping it down. And it came up in a really interesting way for me, which was weeks in, we were in New York City and we're going to take a train on Amtrak going up to see my husband's mom who lives in the Adirondacks. And I don't know, there's something about catching trains and planes that my lava comes up. Because I get super crazy anxious. And even my family knows, like, just don't talk because mom's in the zone. Like, I just get so, and it's in the new train station and nobody knows how to get on these trains because it's a brand new train station. They just opened in New York and it's the longest line you've ever seen. And, you know, when you're in Vienna, those Austrians have it down. There's a track, there's a sign, there's LED signs everywhere. And they'll tell you, stand here to get on the car for the seat you have. Like it's so ordered. And New York, it's literally like, run, go, get in line, which car? And it's so stressed. And I've got all of our luggage. I've got two teenagers. And we don't have seats because you don't get assigned seats. So part of it is, will we get a seat? Will we be able to sit together? I have a special needs son. I can't have him sitting by himself. And so I got the lava came up. We're on the train. I've got all this luggage because, of course, I had to buy some luggage because I bought so much stuff that I had luggage in Europe. So this man in front of me is talking and all I can see in front of me is a man with luggage and he's talking to a woman asking which view of the Hudson, which side of the train will the view of the Hudson be on? Meanwhile, seats are literally filling up like this all around us. Pop, 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 pop. And I'm literally like, because I haven't found any seats together. And I say to the guy, hey, can we just go, please? Meaning move to the side if you're going to have a conversation about the river and we want to move past to go find a seat. And now in front of him, a woman has been crouched over, which I didn't see her. And she stands up and she goes, "Forgive me, but I've got a stroller and a baby here. And I'm just trying to make it work." And the whole train, it feels like the whole train looks at you like you're the Karen, right? Like you're the asshole who just yelled at a woman and a baby and her stroller and her suitcases. Like I am such an asshole. And I just was so upset about being this asshole. So they get to sit down, we get our seats, and I'm just sitting there. The lava is up. I am just like, I'm such an asshole. Why do I do this? Why do I get so anxious that I would yell at a woman and her baby? Like, that is lava. It makes no sense. Like, what is going on, Meg, that your brain goes on fire when this situation comes up? And it does. It just goes on fire every time. And instead of just deciding to berate myself or spin into a fucking anxiety spiral about it, I was like, well, what is it? Like, let's just let the lava come up. Like, it's up now. It's walking around. I hate myself. It's up and walking around. And I just oddly, and I didn't write any of it down because I have a piece of paper. And I just let it talk. I can't explain. I just let it, just words. Just, okay, what are the words? What do you want to say? What is this? And all of these words come up. And where it got to pretty quickly is, there's no spot for me. There's no place for me, which is so tied to my childhood. I grew up next door until I was like six because there were five kids. My mother couldn't deal with it. And I basically grew up at the neighbors. Like literally, like I had a bed there. I ate my meals there. Right. And so this little piece of lava of there's no spot for me finds its crevice when I have to get to a seat or I don't have a reservation or there's no spot. Like there's no logic to it, by the way. It just found its place and it's real triggered in this spot. And it was very, sitting on that train, I just felt the release of it. Like I could see how this no spot for me, no place for me comes into my work in a good way. I'm using that lava. Like if you think about Riley and Inside Out, she's having to handle this huge thing and figure something out all on her own. That kind of no spot for her, like, where is she? She's at a new school. It kind of funneled in there. Right. And then I can look
sadness.
At
sadness
and sadness has sadness. No spot.
Joy
right?
is,
and
joy
has been pushed out, like,
out
right yeah. now. And there's other lava and other people can put their lava in all of those plot things, but mine is in there. And, and there's probably deeper things under no spot for me. You're not hearing me, abandonment, right? Like, why don't you see that I have no spot? Why aren't you helping me get a spot, right? Which is what Riley does at the end of the movie, right? Which is finally, well, if I don't have a spot, I'm going to leave, right? Maybe then you'll notice, right? Kind of stuff. So, and again, I wasn't conscious of that when I was writing it in terms of the intellectual words I'm using now to describe it, but it was up and walking around when I was writing it, right? That feeling. And then I can see it in the fights I have with my husband sometimes. Right? These kind of weird fights where my brain goes on fire. And now I can kind of go like, well, what's happening probably is I'm feeling like there's no spot here for me or whatever. Like it just gives me a door to try to catch the fight before it spins into nonsense because I'm just feeling vulnerable in this particular way. So really what I'm talking about is I let the lava come up and tell me what it was. And what that is that's a belief, right? That there's no spot for me. That's just a belief that has been lodged in there since I was, 2 years old. And I just sat on the train and I was like, Meg, is that true? Is it true that there's no spot for you? And it was so clear, like the older part of my brain, be that the adult I am or that kind of ancient part of us that is forever, wise in the back of our heads. It was like, no, it's not true. Because even if there is no spot for me, I can create my own spot. I am not a child anymore. I'm not 5 years old at the whim of all of these people. I can create my own spot. And then it went another level and I realized I am the spot. I am the spot. There is no outside anything. because I am the spot. And as long as I know I am the spot, I am safe and I'm okay because I am the spot. So if we got on this train and there were no seats, I'd figure it out because the person I can rely on is myself. And there's just a ground to stand on now. That doesn't mean that brain isn't going to go on fire and I'm going to catch myself because this thing is ancient and it's been in there. The pathways are burned deep, right? Deep into the unconscious and into the amygdala. So it's going to happen again, but I can catch it. All I got to do is catch it. Oh, this is happening. It's up. I don't feel like I have a spot. Okay, well, Meg, is that true? No, you are the spot. And if you are the spot, then what can you do right now? Number one is relax, because even if you miss the plane, it's okay, because the spot isn't on the plane. You are the spot. You are in your own place. So it was very profound. And then just to end on reality. So the dining car opened, which my teenager's been waiting for, right? So I'm going to the dining car with my teenager for sure, because of course he's starving because he hasn't eaten for an hour. And I'm like, okay. And I walk up to this couple and I see she's got the baby on her lap. The baby's probably like one or one and a half. And I say pretty quietly, because it's a baby and she seems to be nodding off, I just want to apologize. I'm feeling very badly for what I said. And do you need anything from the car? Do you want water or anything for the baby? And the husband goes, you just woke up the baby. Will you just leave? So he's madder now. He's madder now. But what was amazing is, because moms are moms, and she looked at me and she put her hand on her husband's arm and she said, no. And she looked at me and said, thank you. We're okay, but thank you. Because moms know, like, she knew that I'm a mom who just made a mistake in my fucking frenetic momness. And she got it, right? That I, mm-hmm. what I was trying to do, and that I didn't mean to wake up the baby, which I didn't, by the way, but whatever. But that's also a thing, like, you can fight with the husband in your mind, right? And just spend all of your life energy now fighting with this guy who's attacking, because he probably got in trouble, by the way, right? Because he was asking about the window instead of helping her with the baby, because why isn't he helping her with the baby in the stroller? Like, my brain went into all of that, right? Like, which is like, well, I'm the bad guy, but you aren't helping with the baby and blah, blah, blah. Or I can just say that is a lot of noise and bond with, be with myself and what came up, and then go admit my error and bond with this woman. And then it was done. So that's where I've been.
Wow. Well, I have not been in Europe having epiphanies, I will say.
It's New York.
I've been trying to take care of small things that I can take care of in the chaos and the overwhelm. Like, I made a list of all the doctors that I have not gone to because of the pandemic or fear or whatever. And I made the list and I made the appointments and I went to the appointments. I did not cancel the appointments. I did not reschedule them. I went to the appointments. I went to the dentist. I got a new primary doctor. I got a mammogram. I got blood tests. I did all the things that I have to do. And then, of course, it's not as simple as that, right? There's all the maintenance pieces that come along with that, right? Like, oh, I have high cholesterol. Am I going to do that with my diet? Or, you know, like, so it's sort of, for me, not going to the doctor is saying I'm not prepared to deal with what comes after. Just like not writing. If I don't write, I don't have to deal with what a shit pile I'll put down on the page, right? It's a similar push and pull for me in terms of facing what I know I need to do, what I want to do. I want to take care of my body. I don't want my teeth to fall out of my head. I don't want to have to get a cavity filled or a root canal. So I got to go get my teeth cleaned. So it's like, and I don't want to not write my screenplay, but sometimes I don't want to. I know that didn't make a lot of sense. I'm not great at metaphors. Also, I had an allergic reaction right before this and I took a Benadryl. So if I don't sound totally great, that's my excuse. So one of the doctors that I found was a therapist. And yesterday the therapist said to me, you're an overfunctioner, an overproducer, and you're too hard on yourself. And I took that as a compliment. Legit. I was like, thank you. Like, for me, that means that I am being successful. She's like, it wasn't a compliment, it's a diagnosis. And I was like, sure. But those are the things I think matter. I take pride in working really hard and harder than anyone and like putting in all the work. But what's happening is it's starting to get to be too much. Because then I realize, oh no, I've done nothing for 2 hours, like 2 hours legit looking at Facebook. So that is the shame, right? Like I got so overwhelmed by all the work I'm doing and everything I'm putting into everything. And this is work. This is my family, my friend relationships, the amount of mental energy I spend beating myself up on the daily basis, like all of this, I do everything at 100, right? There is no in between. It's black and white. And this is how I approach my work too, my writing. I'm either all in a project and I'm all in it and I'm inside it and I'm doing it, or I've totally abandoned it and put it out of my mind. And so my assignment is to find balance. And she's given me some homework assignments on this. You know, the first one is ride my bike for 15 minutes a day, just to find a spot where my brain isn't beating myself up or processing or working or overmanaging everything I have to do. Which will be hard because I have not been riding my bike, but just the, like Meg, what you're saying, like for me being told I'm an over-functioner is like, I'm doing it. I'm a successful adult, you know, and that's not what she was saying at all. So I have to figure out what that means. Because if I'm over-functioning on every single project I have, I will not deliver close to what I need to on each of those projects. Understanding what is the best part of me to give to that project, and then that being enough is really a hard concept for me, because I will break myself trying to fill in other people's gaps, or what I perceive as other people's gaps. I have this intense perfectionism about things that don't really matter, but I spend a lot of time on them. And how this comes into place is what I experience as writer's block. Now, we all talk about, I don't think writer's block is a real thing. I think there's a system of excuses we give ourselves. Lava, psychological, you really are frozen from fear. But mine comes from, I'm afraid I will not deliver what I need to deliver on that project. So I'm afraid to start, you know, and I was having that with this project that I was talking about. And so finally I was like, I'm just gonna write the silliest pilot I can think of, the thing that will make me have fun and laugh. And it's been an intense summer for me in a lot of ways. But yeah, the thing I'm most proud of, I think, is that I made those doctor's appointments, and then I went to those doctor's appointments, and then I am in setting intentions to follow through on taking care of my body, because as a writer, it's my tool. Like if I'm physically not healthy, I can't write. It affects my mental, right? It takes me down. So yeah, I know that was a lot of self blah, blah, blah about my psychological process.
Well, what else would it be? We're catching up. We're all doing self blah, blah, yeah. blah. Jeff, but you have self blah, blah, blah you want to tell us?
I want to start by saying thanks to both of you, because like my favorite part about the Adventures of Screenwriting segment in this show is I just find so much of what I'm hearing so immediately relatable and comforting. Meg, hearing you talk about the fact that like you had a stretch where you like questioned, like, do I even like writing, is so nice to hear, because I'm like kind of mired in that right now. And it was so funny, Lauren, when you shared the therapist telling you that you're like an overproducer with like toxic overachieving qualities, truly my response would have been like, so is that an A or an A plus?
No, that was legit. Like, you know. So I'm doing, yeah, is that an A or an A plus? Is it a 99 or 100? What are we talking here on the scale of amazing?
Exactly. Yeah. That would have been my exact response. I feel like so seen by that. And I would guess that a lot of our listeners feel the same way. And it's funny, I am like having my first dentist appointment, since I don't even want to share when. It's like embarrassing, and next Friday. And I think sometimes what I do is, when you're your own career as a writer, it can be easy to prioritize that over like other important things in your life, because you're like, this is my paycheck. I'm all I've got. Everything else is on the back burner. Everything feels so high stakes, but like also like your health is high stakes. And I sometimes minimize that. So I just very much relate to what you shared, and everyone wish me luck at my dentist appointment on Friday. It could be a little gnarly. We'll see.
Oh no, my excuse wasn't the pandemic. It was a year before the pandemic. They had to break out that water blaster thing.
Yeah.
It took a while.
I know, don't have a cavity,
but like I was getting a poo tooth, right? It looked brown because it was so much gunk behind it. So.
Well, hey, no cavity. That's a win. I feel like that's a success. You leave the dentist without a cavity. Because
the plaque had such a coating over my whole teeth that it was protecting it all from cavities.
Lord.
Gross. I would have to imagine that dentists post-pandemic are having like, I bet it has been a journey for dentists getting in all these mouths the last couple of years. But in terms of, it's been a very interesting couple months for me because we premiered the film actually like after our hiatus. So we premiered it in Marina Del Rey and the Marina Del Rey Film Festival, and Boris and Savannah were there, which was really fun. They're on the call now. And the screening like went really well, and we actually won the film festival, which was really cool. And I've been hearing back from some other festivals, and like there's one festival, I can't announce it, but they're like flying us out. So it's interesting, like that part of my life is feeling kind of exciting, and we're trying to sell the movie right now. But like, I'm finally writing again, and it is so fucking hard. Pardon my French, but it's been such a weird gap between like feeling like I am getting validation that I'm like, okay at something professionally, while trying to do that same thing again and feeling like I'm truly the worst writer on the planet. It's like this very weird gap. And I'm trusting that I'm able to do it again because I'm like, this other thing in my life is telling me like, maybe I'm good at this. But then I get to the page and I'm just like, I can't believe how hard this is. The things that are coming out of my brain and onto the page feel so far away from what I had initially pictured this to be. And as you vomit a draft, you just kind of have to push through it. It's like you're crawling through a pile of shit that you know you're eventually going to clean away and find things beneath. But it's just been very interesting to like, have a finished thing that is like one something and we might sell, and then be writing again in the hopes that I can get there again and feel so far away from it and feel legitimately very bad at it. So it's a little scary right now. I don't know. And I'm not particularly enjoying it.
It's so normal. It's so normal. I mean, it never goes away. Every time you're like, what are words? How does a movie work? How does a movie work? Like every time. Eventually your brain can jump quicker through the poo pile, like to get to a scene that you're like, oh, that's, I don't know if it's going to be in the movie, but I like that scene. Like sometimes that's all I'm trying to get to is a moment, a character showing up, it's like a discovery trek. So you're not alone, Jeff. It doesn't mean anything other than you're a writer.
I know.
Yeah.
That's so true. And you know what? I do know if I were to compare this is my, eighth feature I've written or tried to write or whatever. And I know if I compared this feature to my first feature on a first draft, which ironically I thought was great. Like your first feature, you write, you just do it and you're like, oh man, I'm a writer. I'm going to win an Oscar. I would probably be much better this first pass. And it's, of course, things show up where you're like, oh, there it is. Like there's the smart brain. Like there's my writer brain. There's my, I don't want to sound self-congratulatory, but like there's my brilliance, right? Like it's there. Yeah. There's my thing. But it's kind of few and far between in that first draft because you're just pushing through to find those moments. But it's hard.
It's having, you know, the story world is having a conversation with you, right? And half the time those scenes don't work because you had an idea of what it was going to be. And then that's not what it is.
Right. Because it doesn't work.
It's tugging you over here, right? Mm-hmm. And it's saying flat. And it's just about hanging in and poking and poking and poking and poking. And, you know, you can be on draft 2 years in on draft, you know, whatever, and the whole thing blows up and you start over. That is, you know, that's when I'm like, I don't look ahead. Sometimes I get into this process and it feels like you're on the high wire. And if you ask me to look down right now, I'm going to fall. I realize how far down the mountain I am. Like I thought I was at base camp 12 and I had like two more base camps and I was at the top of Mount Everest. And from these notes, I'm like, shit, I'm at base camp 1. And sometimes it's hard. It just takes a few days to get the energy and the motivation to go back in. So sometimes I do think it's important just to start thinking, not look too far ahead about what you want it to be and will it sell and is it good enough, and just completely what you're doing, which is to stay with the fun. And what Lauren is giving such good advice is, what's fun? What's a great fun story? Does that scene make you giggle, right? Or get verklempt? And if you don't know how to get from here to here, who cares? who cares? You know, like you just don't, you can't just keep it. That is where you start to get stuff, just tacking it down. And
that's right.
That it's just discovery.
It's just that thing, Meg, where it's like, it's, you have to be so non-judgmental as you write, or you just can't do it. Because it's like, you're even, I'm writing scenes knowing this is not for any purpose other than to find another scene. I am positive this is getting cut in the next draft, but it just has to, it has to show up so I can find something else.
Yeah, it's so track. Interesting. It's track.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's just track, right?
Yeah. And
I mean,
and then sometimes that scene is the pivotal scene that you didn't, like you have decided right. It doesn't matter, have any merit, but then that is the scene that unlocks something and it is in the movie. Like you're right.
Yeah.
We judging while you write is dangerous. I think that's why we need to work on craft, because we have to then trust the craft to become mm-hmm. like to be a subconscious thing, right? Like your first yeah. screenplay is always like, I thought this was great. And then you're like, yeah, it's great because it exists, you
right.
know, but like that the piece of keeping writing and learning craft is what we have to trust at some point.
Mm, totally. And just that we can do it. Like, I think it's such a weird experience to be like kind of having validation in this other thing that I can, but then actively feeling like I can't. And it's probably not like many other jobs. And of course you do get marginally better each time, but I think just like recognizing and remembering that like we do kind of have a job where each time you do it again, it's not, it's kind of like riding a bike, but not really, because it's a totally different bike. Like if it, it's like,
and it's on
like
fire,
you know how to ride
and it's on fire.
Yeah.
And it's on fire. It's because it's like, art. It's because it's yeah. art. It's not, yeah. it's not a craft. It's art.
Right.
I binge watched Blown Away, the reality
Love
show, The Glassmakers.
Because
there's
show.
Something very satisfying watching people blowing glass, knowing that at any second, this thing could smash into 1,000 pieces and they just have to start again. And they learn something about why it smashed. And sometimes yep. there's no reason, it just smashed. Who knows?
Or breaks.
And it's so that they all get, and by the way, I don't even like everything they get to at the end. Like
no?
you can also from the show, see who is an artist and who's a craftsman, meaning mm-hmm. that is so well crafted. But when they asked you to do the seven deadly sins, when they said sloth, they didn't mean make them a sloth, right? Like there's some of them are so literal because they're craftsmen. So they do like fire and ice, and then they make fire and ice. And you're like, no, it's artistry. It's about expression. It's about self-authenticity coming out in a piece of glass. And
right.
some people know that. And some people don't. But that doesn't mean they're not going to ever. But right now they're kind of stuck in the literal. And I think that's fine to be stuck in the literal as a writer. If all you can do is pick up Save the Cat and put down the beats because that's where your brain is, then that's where your brain is. But no, that's where we talk about lava. The artistry will also need to find, come up through the crevices somewhere.
It's so interesting.
Well, that's
Lamed,
where you
because...
need to know craft, right? You need to know the craft. Like I like to watch dance competition shows and you can see the same thing where people have the, what do they call it in dance? Technique. They have the technique, but they're not adding the artistry to it. Or their artistry is so good that the even though the technique is a little bumpy, you are buying it. You're in. You can't take your eyes off them. So there's this sweet spot that's sort of unknowable. It could go anywhere from I'm going to go blow everyone's socks off or I'm going to fall down, right? I'm either going to, this project's never going to work or I'm going to win an Oscar, right? There's this spectrum that's possible in every project we do.
So
you
true.
Have to be in the moment, right? In the moment. And it's so hard.
But I'm glad you brought up Blown Away, Meg. I feel like that's valuable for writers because what's crazy about that show is like our writing, it can break at any time. Sometimes for no reason, like you mentioned, just something arbitrary. But they never, glassblowers seem to just be like, okay, they move on so nonchalantly. Like they recognize the inevitability of their things breaking because it's so built into the process of glassblowing. And we forget as writers that like, that's also built into the process of writing. So I think like, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it is built into the process of writing.
Yeah, it's a part of it.
That smashing of it
right.
is... And you know, you'll have somebody give you notes and it literally feels like they're just walking through smashing it,
yeah.
right? And that is the process of writing or if any art. So, and it can take a while after the smashing to get your brain up and motivated to go back into it. It kind of can feel like lava to even start trying again because you're kind of bruised from the smashing. Right. But even people who smash have the intention of helping you with your story, right? They really do. I mean, mm-hmm. unless they're, you've given it to your arch enemy who's, you know, which some people do for self-sabotage, don't do that. But yes, it's all part of the process. And, you know, the tools that you want to use, I think are very personal. You know, I have a friend who's a writer who feels very strongly that certain tools should not be used because it leads to inauthentic writing. Like, let's say Save the Cat or picture a actor in the part, or, you know, and that's one way of thinking about it, and one way to challenge yourself. Like, if you didn't get to use those tools, what would you do? And what authentic thing would come up? But I personally think they're just tools. And if you're originating from them, yes, they're going to start blocking authenticity and lava and the artistry, but they can also inspire it. They can also help you carve into it if that's your intention. So I don't think anything's off the table in terms of what you can use to get there, as long as you don't only do that and just rely mm-hmm. on it. If you're relying on it without the lava and artistry, then it will be flat. Then it will be flat.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate y'all hearing me out. It's I'll keep you posted as I remember how to write. but it's been, the good news is, it's like sometimes writing feels like you're slogging for 3 hours just to get 10 minutes of magic. But like, I've gotten pockets of that magic. So I think I like it. I'm like re-remembering, but it'll be interesting. But yeah, I'm like glad to have the show back. It's just been very valuable to hear both of you share your time away because it's helping me. So thanks to both of you for sharing.
Savannah or Boris are on. Do you guys want to tell us anything about anything that happened while we've been away that would be, you know, something that you want to share? You don't have to, and we don't have to put it on the show. You could just share for us if that's what you would prefer.
One thing I wanted to ask you guys, because like I'm in the process now of cutting a short film that I shot, and one thing I'm sort of noticing
and wrote and directed, I'm just going to say, Boris okay, shot good, and directed yes. his own short film
okay, great. Too, awesome.
Which is really exciting. Yes,
but I'm starting to get to a point where, you know, we have a rough cut start to finish, and I'm sort of feeling like it almost has like a mind of its own. Like it's almost starting to become its own thing. And I'm in a way, like I don't have complete control of it anymore. And I kind of like that. I kind of like seeing like the direction it heads in on its own. And I'm just wondering, like, is that something that naturally happens to projects as you get close to the finish line? Or is that like a red flag? I don't know.
As long That's as you the... like it, it's not a red flag, right? Okay. Like if it's starting to not feel yours, and you've taken so many notes and cut it to so many other people's versions that it doesn't feel yours anymore, that's a red flag. But you're yeah. smiling as you say that here on Zoom, and you say it sounds like it's a delightful experience. And that to me is the freaking golden ticket that you want. You want it to become its own thing in the best sort of way. Like it's still you, but it's becoming its own thing. I think that's gold.
Yeah. I mean, check your emotional reaction when you watch it as a whole, right? I just watched something I'm working on as the whole piece. Mm-hmm. I smiled a little at the beginning, and then I just kept smiling bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger into the end. And my intention was that at the end of this piece, the audience would be like, fuck yeah, I can do that too, with a big old smile on your face. And that was exactly how I felt. So while so much of it has changed, and it definitely has a life of its own now, the emotional reaction I had while watching it was exactly my intention. Because, you know, everyone who's working on it is brilliant. But so you can check that. Like, is this the story I wanted to tell? And at the end, is the audience going to feel the way I want them to feel?
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
Of course, I don't know that there's any way it can't become something else, because actors, locations that fell out, so many things start to make it a different thing. Mm-hmm. And that you, some part of artistry is allowing that to happen. And it sounds like you did allow it to happen, and that you're being brave in edit and not trying to force it back to what it was, and letting it become something different is hard and great that you're already doing that. That's advanced. Wow. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I think it's just that a lot of the little details, like so many of the little details are not what I pictured, but I don't think that like the heart of it or just the fundamentals are any different.
Great.
And part of it's I just got really fortunate with the actors I had. I'm so happy with them that just watching them make decisions has been really fun too in post. So
that's amazing when that happens. Like sometimes I've seen in both pro and student work where you think this is the main part, but then that actor can't bring it. But this person next to them is like suddenly sparkling, like, and you're like, wow, I gotta look at that guy, right? Mm-hmm. So they can really shift. So, and it's great. Always actors, great actors. That's where you put your money because yes, they will bring so much.
Just a reminder of like, someone really brilliant told me once, like you make three movies, you write one, you make one on set, and then you edit one. And they're all three, they can be three kind of different movies. They have the same soul. But like, just a reminder that you're creating three separate things with each phase of production. And if the heart of it is there, then the writing is there too, you know?
I'm curious, like in animation, you know, you have so much control in post. Is it any different? Like, does it become closer to what you wrote? Is there more room for play? Like, how does that differ from live?
Well, there's so many more people involved in terms of, as soon as you go into the storyboards, it starts shifting because story artists are setting camera, acting, they can rewrite their, you know, it is really made in the boards and then it's made again in edit. The editor comes in. So it is the exact same process. It's just you're pulling on different things. It's the same. And the great thing about being a writer in animation is you get to see your work up and know immediately what doesn't work versus in live action. Well, they're shooting it, right? Versus in animation, you get to make the movie many, many times. And let it fall down, right? And bars are set. That's the funniest sequence I ever saw. That is the bar of humor in this movie now, right? Which is great and kind of scary. Or emotionally, it's not working. Why isn't it working? So that's the great thing about edit is you get to be in animation, you get to see the movie made. I mean, so I'm a much better writer, like 1,000 times better writer, having worked in animation and seen my work go up. But doesn't mean you're like a genius now who can do it in one go. You still, it's like we talked about, like you still have to start over and do it again and again. Savannah, what about you?
So I think I'm going to share a personal update that happened over the summer. Well, I signed up for my very first screenwriting class with Script Anatomy, and it's a genre TV pilot writing class. And it actually kind of coincided with me going back and visiting my mother and us having a really beautiful kind of healing moment after many, many years of some conflict. So the reason why that's front of mind, Meg, is just your experience of you being on that train and the lava coming up, I think is just, it's so powerful. But it, for me, was a moment of, after kind of this pivotal healing moment with my mother, I went into my third week of this class. And I was just like, oh my God, this is what this idea is all about. And this is there. And I could actually physically feel it.
Oh, good. I love that.
And then we've kind of gone on this journey where we're reading this book called No Bad Parts by Richard Schwartz, Dr. Richard Schwartz. It's kind of about it's called the internal family systems. It's kind of therapy sort of thing. But in this writing, it's so, it's mind-blowing, but they talk a lot about how our mind isn't just kind of like this mono mind, but we're just like this multiple series of parts, you know, and they're all there for a purpose. They're there to protect us. They're there to manage us, but they're all kind of blocking us from our true kind of core authentic self. And it's just so wild when, you know, I took this class because I want to be a better producer. I want to be a better writer. I want to meet more writers and understand, you know, the struggle to get through it, just to be better at my own job. And what I'm realizing is that like writing is like, this is helping me become a better person too. And like heal the wounds that I have in my life. And I don't know, it's just so meaningful to.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So it's an exciting summer, you know, it's an exciting part. You know, I just graduated the graduate program at UCLA, and it feels nice to be investing in myself as an artist, but, you know, also as a person and being a better person in the world.
Thank you for, no, it isn't a lot. Thank you for sharing that. I love it because yes, writing as art does make us better people, and it does make us deeper people and more connected people, which can be painful, and it can also be joyous. Mm-hmm. I love that.
It's also an exercise just to look back at your work and figure out what the thematic is and the story you've been telling and how it's changing, mm-hmm. and how that looks like the story you've been living and how that's changing, right? That's always interesting to me as an exercise, even on a project, watching how it's iterating, if it's an original, you know, watching how it's iterating and what's more and more important to me until I finally find that space of, oh, it's here, right? And then going too far and then coming back. Because our work reflects us and then we reflect our work, and it's a conversation, Meg, like you said, we're
and
talking.
That's true. Yeah,
about the world.
That's true for producers too. You know, if Savannah, you decide producing is the road you want to go on, the producers are also artists in that they have thematics in the things that they choose to put their life energy behind to get up and going. You know, of course, as a producer, you can get assigned to a project. I'm not talking about that, but you know, the ones that you're going to work the years it takes to get it together and get the financing and get it up and going. Those are very much emotionally connected to those producers thematically and why they want to do that. So, and those are the best producers, the ones that have access to that, so that you can, you know, the only trick will be as a producer, if your lava is different enough from the lava of the creator, you have to align to theirs. Now you're always trying to work to something that's so deep, it could connect to any human, no matter age, creed, country, you know? So you are trying to get to that. That's why it's always the best, in my opinion, as producers to ask questions. But when you have that interior toolbox yourself to understand that it's so helpful. It's so, so helpful. So even if you choose the producing and not the writing, it'll be incredibly good for your work.
Yeah, because a writer might call you one day and be like, I don't know what is happening. I can't figure this out. And then you'll need to help them figure out how to get on track so that they feel powerful and curious and interesting again, so that they can actually write it and deliver something.
And there'll be a moment when you're going to see something in the script, because you'll be able to tone down with them. I was mentoring a girl who had a story about a mom and a girl who were taking her father's body across country, and it was in the back in the trailer, and we were talking, and all of a sudden I started to dig into the lava, into this stuff, into those things. And it turns out that her sister had died, and she had kind of the normal people, you know, that movie that responds to it, where who was the, maybe that good sister died and I'm, you know, left. And it was just very deep, right? And I was like, I think you have the wrong person in the trailer. Mm. You know, yeah. that her brain had wanted to talk about the baggage and the pressure and the, what it felt like to live as the alive sister, but it was so dangerous and felt so hot that she made it the dad, right? And now, does that mean she has to change her story? Not necessarily, right? I'm not saying it has to become autobiographical, but the emotion attached, right, to that pulling around, right, this weight is what, you know, you as a producer are kind of taking their hand and walking mm-hmm. them in and letting them know it's safe to go in here. There's going to be no judgment, and whatever comes up, comes up, and whatever happens, the project happens. Don't listen to the studio anymore. I don't care about any of those notes. Let's just do this right now. Cause here it is. Right. And that's an incredible gift and sacred job, I think, as a producer or a consultant, to be there with that person doing that. And they have to have a lot of trust in you to do it. Right. But I find it, one of the reasons I consult is to that moment is so sacred, when you see, you can see it on their face. You can see it crack open. Like I'm sure happened to you when you were in your class and realizing, oh my God, this is all the same thing about my mother, right? It's, oh, it, that's the money, man. That's the hold your breath moment. I'm like, God, we're here. Stay brave, stay in it. We're here. Again, doesn't have to be autographical. It's just the feeling. And I think we're going to do a whole show on lava, which is a good segue into our next episode.
And remember, you're not alone, and keep writing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community, and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show. You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.